Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Get to Michael Anderson's question in a moment. They emailed in. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. Time to pinch hit with Eduardo Nunez.
Check of the runners, the 1-0. Nooney swings it, drives one to left, high and deep by the wall. Gone! Three-run pitch homer, Eduardo Nunez. Can you believe it? And the Red Sox lead it 8-4.
The guy laughing in the background is Tim Nevert. Joe Castiglione with the call on the Red Sox radio network last night. That put it away, made it 8-4, and that was the final. All right. Let's get to Michael's question here. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. First of all, I want to congratulate you on the recent addition to your family. Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate that. Spoiler every chance you get. Michael, I'm very good at that, so thank you. All right, now my question. How does Nick Bosa's decision to skip the rest of the season to prepare for the draft affect a scholarship? And can they offer that scholarship to another player or recruit? Okay. So, Michael, here's the answer to both. Number one, the second he withdrew from school, he's off scholarship. So Nick Bosa's scholarship for him is done. Okay? So he's withdrawn from school, and he's going to work out. And that's it. So for him, his scholarship is finished. Now, what can they do with it? They can now take the scholarship and give it to a deserving walk-on, for example. And so, I mean, take, for example, you know, Jan Johnson got a scholarship last week. They had the scholarship available. They finally were able to get one to Jan Johnson. That's big, especially in Jan's family, because right now the Johnsons are paying for three of their children to go to college. Well, now they don't. Now it's down to two because Jan's on scholarship. So Ohio State now has the freedom to give that scholarship to anybody who's on the current team that doesn't have one. And they can do that to finish out the semester if they want. Bosa, first of all, in terms of the ability now to re-recruit with that in the early signing period, I think Ohio State already had assumed that he was not going to use his last year of eligibility anyway. And I think Ohio State, because Bosa's a third-year player. So I think they were already assuming that that scholarship was going to be available for the next recruiting class. So that's not going to affect much because the assumption was already made that he wasn't coming back. But they can take the current scholarship he's on, which he's now off because he forfeited it by withdrawing from school, and they can give it to any walk-on on the team they want if they so desire. Okay? So, Michael, two excellent questions. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. So there you go. Okay. Let's get to another key part. Parking lots. Forecasts and existing conditions force closure of several grass parking lots for the Iowa game. Fans are encouraged to travel in car, not in RV. Parking changes have been announced. Several intramural fields for football parking in this week's rain will continue to cause more damage to the fields, with fall intramural sports still in progress. Fans who normally park their cars and RVs in paved lots are unaffected. As of today, yellow lot 12, the orange preferred car, brown preferred, and family-friendly lots will be closed on game day. So yellow lot 12. They're going to monitor the forecast the rest of the week, which could impact additional parking lot closures. So just keep that in mind. Just want to make sure. Okay, so any other information we get, we'll pass it along to you. Okay? All right. Tomorrow's our high school football roundtable. It is the final weekend. So, Sean, what is the playoff picture since obviously everybody gets in?
All right, so we got the Quad A breakdown currently in District 4. Jersey Shore, Selwyn's Grove, they both have a record of 4-5, but Jersey Shore has a power ranking of 512, Selwyn's Grove 488, and then you've got Midwest, Shikellamy, and Columbia Montour Votech. Midwest power rankings at 423, Shikellamy 304, Columbia Montour Votech with a power ranking of 282. So if the playoffs were to start today, Shikellamy would go to Jersey Shore, and then you got a nice little Snyder County backyard scrap with Selwyn's Grove and Midwest. Midwest would have to go to Selwyn's Grove. So we'll see if that stays in place for next week for Friday night the 2nd. So District 4 AAA, you've got a total of 11 teams in AAA. 8 teams will advance. So currently outside looking in, you've got Kalinowski Valley, they're winless, Milton 1-8, and Mifflinburg sitting at 2-7. Warrior Run is in. They're currently the 8th seed. They also have a record of 2-7, but their power ranking is higher than Mifflinburg. Not by much, though, 298 to 285. So you've got in AAA, Danville leading the way with a 677 power ranking, followed by Montoursville, Central Columbia, Shamokin, Loyal Sauk, Lewisburg, Athens, and Warrior Run. So there's a chance that we may have a Lewisburg-Central Columbia rematch. Central Columbia easily took care of the Green Dragons last week, despite Max Moyers rushing for 199 yards and one touchdown. So Max Moyers, the sophomore running back, he has a chance to break the all-time school record in his junior. Well, he, depending on how far they get in the playoffs, he could even do it this year. So far, grand total for a career, he's got over 2,700 yards already. And I believe the career mark is 3,300, a little over 3,300. Greg Wetzel was telling me about that this afternoon. So there's a shot we may have a Lewisburg-Central Columbia rematch, three versus six next weekend. But Danville's sitting pretty. Their power ranking is 677. Montoursville's power ranking is 596. Montoursville comes down to Selwyn's Grove on Friday night. Danville will take on Southern. So you got Montoursville moving up to take on a Quad A competitor, and you got Danville taking on a Double A competitor. But they are playing Southern Columbia, the number one team in the state. So we'll throw that little caveat out there, Bob.
And, you know, the dark horse in all of this in the AAA is team Loyal Sauk, which doesn't have a great record, but they lost their premier quarterback,
Connor Watkins.
Yeah, with a broken collarbone. The word is out of the Williamsport area, he may be back for the playoffs. I mean, when he went down, their regular season was shot.
And the collarbone is on his other side, not on his throwing side. So that helps out too. But you're right. If Connor Watkins comes, if he can come back, Bob, that's going to change the complete dynamic of the AAA bracket for sure.
So it's going to be a very exciting bracket to watch because the Montoursville Danville game, 52-26 by Danville, but it was very close, and then Danville's speed machine took over late in the game and ran it up convincingly.
So we'll check, since we brought up Southern a second ago, we'll check AA. So you have 10 teams in AA. 8 teams will advance. Southern, of course, they're leading the way. 9-0. Their power ranking is 764. You've got Mount Carmel. They're in second. Their power ranking is 644. And then you got the dominating team from up in the northern tier, Wellsboro. Doug's Wellsboro Hornets. They are 8-1. Their power ranking is 614. And then you've got North Penn, Mansfield, Troy, Bloomsburg, Towanda, and Line Mountain. So Line Mountain is currently your 8th seed at 4-5. So Line Mountain would have the daunting task of having to go to play number one seed Southern Columbia in the first round next weekend. So that's your top 8 in single A, in double A. And then just a quick look at single A, you got Canton, Muncie, South Williamsport, Montgomery. 4 out of the 6 teams in that group will advance. And you got Sayre and Bucktail. Those are the 2 outside looking in. So Canton 8-1, Muncie, 6-3. Canton already beat Muncie in the regular season, and that was a matchup of two 5-0 teams a little over a month ago. South, 5-4. That's kind of rare for South being 5-4. They've always had such a dominating running back offensive line tandem this decade. Of course, talking about Dominic Bragalone, who went to Lehigh. So they're trying to find their stride this year. And Montgomery, they're 4-5. They would have to go up to Canton then next week.
Well, the big problem with Canton being in the playoffs is no one knows where it is, and no one's ever been there before.
Right off Route 14, man.
Yeah.
You've never been to the Apple Festival? Is it the Apple and Cheddar Festival in Canton?
I kind of missed it the last couple decades.
Cheese Fest?
Yeah.
Cheese-a-palooza?
I think it's on your... Canton is somewhere toward New York, the southern border of New York, is what I know.
Okay. I thought it was halfway between Trout Run and Tawan and Troy.
It's up by Shunk.
I thought Shunk was on the other side of Eagles Mirror.
It is. on the way to Canton, apparently.
You would know that.
Yes. So, yeah. Now, the big thing was, and Wellsboro has put out some incredibly good athletes over the last decade, and they've had a tremendous record of wins and losses, very approximating what Southern Columbia has done, not close, but they've been consistently 9-1, 10, had some undefeated regular season.
Wellsboro had a great quarterback. I believe his last name was Pietropolo.
He ended up getting a scholarship to Indiana University of Pennsylvania.
And how about this? Former Montoursville High quarterback, Bryson Messina.
Yes.
Mike's kid. He was named PSAC East Division Player of the Week last week in the matchup with, I'll pull up his stats real quick. They played Kutztown over the weekend, and I believe he ended up, he ended up with like 500 yards.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. 36-53, 510 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah,
not too shabby.
Started out, I believe, at Lafayette, if I'm not mistaken, and then has transferred into the PSAC, and he's really set up, as you just listed, incredible
now
numbers.
Shippensburg, yeah.
Yeah, and, Shippensburg's not a bad team, and a bad school. They've been in the Division II national championship game, so
they've had some tussles with Bloom over the years. I know you've been into many of those at Redmond Stadium.
Some legendary battles up there between the Red Raiders and the Huskies.
So you got Danville Southern coming up on Friday night. That'll be fun to follow. Of course, you got the Coal Bucket game. See if Shamokin can finally win one over Mount Carmel. Be a great feather in Henry Hynoski's cap and the town's cap because they've been waiting, 20-plus years to win that Coal Bucket back.
People in Shamokin have run out of coal. There's no buckets left. They're all in Mount Carmel.
So, of course, we'll keep tabs on.
Well, if they have, Jack Ham sold it. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Or has consulted.
To the audience, I have actually been here the entire time.
Yes.
I did not leave. Okay. I just want to know which group of individuals came up with this point system and why do they still have jobs?
Exactly.
Come on.
No, if you put me in an alley with either a knife or a gun pointing at me, and if you asked me how do you figure out the power rankings, I couldn't tell you. I have no clue how they figure it out.
Okay, and I don't really care if they call up the show, whatever.
Yes.
It's wrong. Okay? It's wrong. Play games, win. If you have a winning record or 500 above, you get to the playoffs, you move on. Okay?
Simple.
To me, I'm sorry, it is that simple. Because if you're in a conference, you're going to play conference games, which means you're playing other like-minded schools in terms of what you're doing. If you happen to play a single A and a quad A, whatever. Okay, you're just trying to get as many good games as possible out there, and people don't want to be traveling to Kingdom Come so they can rack up some sort of point system.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sorry, I can't buy into it. I don't like it, and if the fact that and to the people who devised this, just remember, you're not talking to somebody who just started in the job.
Hey,
okay,
amen.
Job. All right. Sorry, it makes no sense to me. None whatsoever. And I think the point system and getting in, that's just a bunch of blah blah mess that I always thought that playoffs would be great for districts and great for the states. I think it's actually for me gone the other way. They've got too many schools in They got too many schools in.
Yes.
And the season's going too long. Right? Well, simple as that. And again, you know, you can do point system all you want. Guess what? Play your conference, win your conference, get into the thing, whatever. I mean, accomplish something. I mean, accomplish something. Okay? I mean, I remember here, Mifflin County got into the playoff to play against, I don't know if it's State College or Duke, but they had one win. I mean, why are they in a playoff? Come on. After a while, that stuff gets to be a little bit much. Where it cheapens the whole thing, in my opinion. All right, Chris in Shamokin Dam is going to tell us that we're all wrong and he's smarter than we are.
Oh, absolutely not. I want to agree with you.
Hi, Chris.
Chris,
it was such a good setup.
one easy answer on why so many teams are in the playoffs. Money.
You got it right, Chris. You are spot on. It's all about the cash.
Here's my opinion, and the way it's set up throughout the state, it's different district by district, and public versus private. I live in Sealands Grove School District, but I was born and raised in the Grove City School District in western Pennsylvania. They're part of District 10, Vice District 4 here in central Pennsylvania, and they, along with Whippeule, only play 9 regular season games. They have one more round of playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives them, where Vice Archbishop Wood, which is a suburban Catholic team in the Philadelphia area,
yes,
they normally have at least one, if not two, byes once the playoff starts. So between them recruiting players from 4 states and having less games, when they reach the state championship, they have better players, and two, they have fresher players.
Chris, you are absolutely right on all those counts. When it comes to the state playoff, okay, my opinion is this. Keep the 6 divisions the way it is. They expanded to 6. Perfect, because that gives me the opportunity to say, okay, let's keep the old system of public school of A, double A, triple, quad A, and make the other two the parochial schools, the non-public schools, okay? One classification for smaller and charter schools and the other one for the bigger Catholic or non-parochial schools. And that way they have their own championship and stay out of it. To me, that's how it should be done, is you go A, double, triple, quad for public schools, and then the other two happen to be smaller charter or parochial schools, and then larger charter or parochial schools, and that's how they play it off that way. Keep the 6, but divide it up that way and get them the heck out of the public school championship.
Well, if the public schools, PIAA and the state, are worried about the Catholic schools suing them, have a public versus private championship after everything's said and done.
Well, I mean, in other words, you've got your championship. We're sponsoring it for you. It just turned out you're going to be facing other like-minded institutions that go about their business the way you do. Meanwhile, our A, double, triple, and quad are doing it in a public school form, which means they're also like-minded institutions that have to draw from their district. And so I think it's fair for all sides.
I know Archbishop Wood, 5 or 6 years ago, had kids from Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and I believe in Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and possibly New York. There were four states. And Erie Cathedral preps the same way they get Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New York.
No question.
No
question. That's why I divide. I keep the 6. You have your 2. The rest of them have 4. And again, the argument will be we're doing it by classification. Size of school, A, double, triple, quad. Size of charter school or non-public school for 1 and 2.
Would you and Jack like some halushki on Saturday?
I asked
a week or two ago.
That's right,
I'd be glad to cook you some.
I'll have to ask Dobro Shonka about that one, okay? Okay. Chris, that's awesome. I've never had Halushki. I've never had it, so I don't, you know, so I can't answer for, even for myself, but I'd try it.
Well, I'll look forward to, I'll bring you some on Saturday at the pregame show.
Okay, that sounds good, Chris. Again, I've never had it before, so
I'm definitely coming. I want to thank Penn State. Is it alumni or who is it that gives up the seats for the veterans?
Yeah, it's the Alumni Association that does that. Yeah, seats for the veterans. That's awesome, and I'm glad you're going to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I appreciate it every year.
Well, we appreciate you every year. So thank you so much for that, for your service.
Sure.
And thank you so much for attending the game on Saturday. I look forward to seeing you.
I'll see you before the game. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye-bye.
I agree with everything you said.
I have a feeling that Derek Williams has never tried Halushki either. So
you never know.
Well, that's true.
I mean, he is a man of the world. But again, this point system, I'm sorry. Stop overthinking the problem. I can't stand when people overthink. Which brings us back to the digital media thing. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Cubits 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Tomorrow, Mark Morehouse will join us from the Cedar Rapids Gazette to talk about Penn State and Iowa. This is after the roundtable featuring Zach Showers, the outstanding Greg Wetzel, and the Shikellamy announcer of the week. Do we have any word yet?
Have not heard anything different. As far as I know, we got a Kevin Herr appearance tomorrow.
Ah, not to be missed. Steve, you know, I was thinking about the Halushka Bowl that's going to take place outside the Bryce Jordan Center. Compliments of our last caller, Chris. My money, the early money, and the odds from Las Vegas, Derek Williams. Remember that name. I think he can win.
Oh, no, no. I'm not surprised. In fact, Vegas has him 5-1.
Yes.
All right, Jesse Doherty, Washington Post. Let's talk about the World Series with him. Hello, Jesse. Welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
I want to get to the Kershaw thing for a moment. Because you're around enough people that know and you talk to enough people. You know, 93-plus was a standard for him. There was a time a year ago where he threw over 93 miles per hour, which is which is now considered an average fastball in the majors.
Right.
93 is an average. Okay, Kershaw threw over 1,500 of those 3 years ago. Okay, this season he's only hit 93 three times, and not once since July 27th. How much has that affected his ability to pitch games the way he wants to?
I think it's made him adjust, for sure. I mean, he's not able to pitch games like the Clayton Kershaw we know for the last 9 years. That's definitely true, and I think you saw that in his numbers this year, that they were very good for most people. They were not very good for Clayton Kershaw standards, and I think...
Right.
You've seen in the postseason that he's now he's a different pitcher. He pitches backwards a lot. He relies on his secondary stuff. I think in this isn't the exact stat, but in Game 5 of the NLCS, I think he had 8 strikeouts all by breaking ball, which is that's not him. I mean, he's always had that curveball. I mean, that curveball is going to get him into the Hall of Fame, but now he has to use it as his not just his out pitch, but the pitch that sets up the out, and it's different, and it's probably still adjusting. So you'll see that now. But he's been good this postseason. It didn't play last night.
All right, now let's get to another part. The Dodgers close out the season, beat Colorado in Los Angeles, warm.
Yep.
Play the series with the Braves, okay, 4 games, warm. Play the Brewers, 7 games, Dome Stadium, warm. Okay, first 2 games, Boston, okay? Okay, ash cans needed in dugout. Okay.
Right.
This is a launch angle team. Okay, the Dodgers are the definition of a launch angle team. They don't mind the strikeouts, but they want to launch it. How much does that really affect their offense? Because they're in a place where maybe the ball might not travel the way they wish.
I think it's an interesting point. I think anytime you're taken out of the environment you're used to playing in, it's difficult, especially when the other team does it all the time. I mean, it's cold in Boston in the spring. Like, this is not right. This is not new to them, whereas, like, the Dodgers, this is like a shock. I mean, you see them all. They're wearing beanies inside Miller Park. It was indoors.
That's true. That's a good point.
They're cold from the breeze coming in from the exit door. But I don't know. I don't know how much it will affect their hitting. I think what you saw last night, I mean, it wasn't a weather thing, but like they didn't know how to play Fenway Park. I mean, right. And there's no secret that it's one of the most bizarre, probably, stadiums, dimensions of, like, any sport, anywhere. I mean, it's so weird.
Believe me, I've gone to 50 to 75 games in my lifetime in Fenway Park. So, believe me, I can give you an education on the angles. I've seen them all.
And I imagine every time you go, you're like, wow, that's weird. I didn't see that wrinkle before.
I know. Like, where'd that door come from?
Right.
In left field, down the left field line, there's a door.
Right.
And it can rattle in the door. You got 3 bases.
Right. But I think you saw that, and I think that's the biggest variable in terms of venue and environment. I don't know if the weather will have a huge play, but the ballpark, the Dodgers looked a little spooked last night.
All right. Let's get to Manny Machado. Give me the domino effect that he has had on their lineup this year.
I think it's getting lost, and maybe rightly so, because of how bombastic's maybe a hyperbolic word, but of how sort of loud his antics have been. He's having an excellent postseason.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he is so good in the middle of their lineup. And it's interesting to me because he's like the one guy that the Dodgers don't match up with. He's the only safe piece in Dave Roberts' lineup. You saw last night. Cody Bellinger doesn't start because it's a lefty.
Right.
And Jock Peterson doesn't start because it's a lefty. Right. And then, you know, Max Muncy doesn't start. These are guys who, like, in most years, or Justin Turner, I'm sorry, he's the other safeties. But when you get into after the top of the order, Machado's the only guy who's, like, who's steady, who's always there. And that's big for this team because I like Robert's managing style. I think sometimes it can take away from the team's ability to get into a rhythm.
Right.
But the fact that Machado's always coming behind those first 3 hitters is some semblance of normal and consistency. And I think the way he's hitting and the way he gives them an edge, and I think it's great. And I think also this team has a lot riding on it, and a lot of baggage, and a lot of expectation. And the fact that his sort of the 2 weeks he's put together here of all this random weird stuff he's doing, I think in a lot of ways taking a lot of pressure off other guys.
Yeah.
He has really taken the entire spotlight. And then the media this time of year is so hard. You talk like a million times a day to a million reporters, and the fact that 75 of them are now around Machado's locker, and other guys can kind of just like mosey out of the clubhouse, like. I wouldn't understate the effect of that. I think it's actually really important for this team.
Justin Turner got hurt spring training, I want to say he got hurt. And for the first half of the year, the Dodgers struggled. Now they acquire Machado, but what has Turner then meant as well as a supplemental part to what Machado can do?
Yeah, I mean, he's protected a lot better now, which is you're seeing him get a little bit more to hit. I think when a guy is not as established as Machado is behind you, or if it's a rotating cast of characters, whether it's Bellinger or Matt Kemp or Max Muncy, like it's a little bit harder to get into a rhythm where you're seeing similar pitches. But the fact that he now can pretty much count on hitting in front of Machado every single game, I think you've seen his production pick up. I mean, he's a guy who comes up in a ton of big spots for them. He's a constant too. I mean, he is the constant for this team. He's a constant voice in the clubhouse. He's a constant in the field at their base. He's a constant in the lineup. Like, Machado's going to come and go. It's very much like a mercenary deal. But I think Turner, I mean, especially you consider this team lost Corey Seager, who's like one of the best shortstops in baseball and still made it this far.
Right.
I think he was really a steadying presence on this team the entire year. And you need that. You can bring in the big pieces. You can have the guy who gets high. You can have the Chris Taylors who become the playoff hero. But you need that constant, the guy who knows the history, knows the clubhouse, knows all the personalities. And I think Justin Turner is just invaluable in all those ways.
Obviously, it's only one game. That's it. So there's a one-game-to-none lead for one team in the series. But what is your impression of the Red Sox?
I think they looked awesome. I think that they do not have the same starting pitching depth as the Dodgers. So I think starting pitching didn't really matter last night. But I do think that in the coming days, you'll see that the Dodgers are maybe able to shift a little bit momentum back because of guys like Walker Buehler and Rich Hill, who have been excellent in the postseason.
Yes.
But the Red Sox, I mean, they just looked the Alex Cora puts in these guys. I know it's a cliche, but and I'm not detracting from Dave Roberts here. I think he's a smart manager. Yeah. But to hit Benintendi second against Chris Sale or against Clayton Kershaw, and obviously it's easy to say in hindsight, but Roberts would never throw a lefty out there second in the order, and he goes 4-for-5, and it's just like he allowed that young guy to play against the lefty at start, and he also gets to double off another lefty reliever. Like, Cora's not mixing and matching in the same way that Roberts does. Maybe his bench isn't as deep, but I just think letting your guys play this time of year, your best players go, is that can be so valuable. So I really like what Alex Cora is doing. I don't think he's pressed the wrong button during this playoff run. He's a rookie manager, so maybe that's coming. I mean, there might be some mistake or some decision we're going to question in the coming days, but it's just they're so good, and they have so many good players, and there's a real value in not trying to do too much. I think we've seen a lot of managing this postseason, and a lot of teams that needed to be managed. I mean, the Brewers made it that far because Craig Counsell managed them to a T.
Right.
But I think the Red Sox, eventually the best players are going to win the games, and I think their trust and their insistence on letting that happen, I think, is going to go a long way.
Jansen is obviously a great closer who, by the way, had a great close, to the season. He came down the stretch and pitched well. Craig Kimbrell did not. Yet the last two games, and especially last night, Kimbrell looked different to you. Did he?
Yeah. I mean, and that's another thing with Cora. It's like, you didn't get away from your guy. And like, at all. And that's going to mean him. Eovaldi can't be your closer. He's your game four starter. And I kind of think, and I'm making a prediction here, I think he's maybe taxing him a little too much right now in the fact that he wants him to be as effective as he can be later in the series. I don't think he needed to throw him last night.
Right.
But Kimbrell, you're going to need it in the ninth. I mean, you don't have the Dodgers bullpen. I think even if Jansen was, struggling, like Roberts has a few guys. Like, Kent Maeda, like, isn't pitching as well as maybe he usually does, but he's a really reliable arm. Ryan Madsen's been great. Like, the Red Sox need Kimbrell. Like, there's no way around it. They need Kimbrell to get out at the end of games. He looked nasty last night. I mean, like, we're unhittable. Like, there was no doubt in my mind if it was a one-run game and the bases were loaded and he had three guys, he was going to get all three out.
I mean it looked like
playing that well.
It looked like Craig Kimbrell in July is what it
looked
like.
Right. He looked so good. I don't know. And I think that's a matter of, like, he stuck with them. Like, a lot of managers would bury that guy. A lot of the way he pitched in the last series. He was letting guys on base. He was making every game close. But, like, I think Cora stuck with him, and he's getting the Kimbrell that you expect, and that's one of the biggest pieces of this series, because these games are going to get closer.
Obviously, the West Coast gets involved here, because if you start at 7:09, for example, it's 4:09 there. I got it. But what can Major League Baseball do about start times so that America actually can watch it?
Right. Yeah, I don't know, like, the ins and outs of ratings, but, like, I don't know if there's any merit in, like, the how ratings, like, are affected as the night goes on, but, like, I can't imagine anyone's watching 11:45.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are, right? But, like, maybe a 7 o'clock start, then you're starting at 4 in L.A. It's hard. This is hard, but it's not like it would change anything. Even if this was in Houston, it would be an 8 p.m. start.
Right,
so it's not like it's even really an L.A. thing. That's just what they're going to do.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, the obvious thing is early start times. I think the solution is to make games quicker and I think they've run out of those, and it's the game is what it is, and I think the game's great for what it is, especially in October with all the managing and all the chess piecing and stuff. But it's not good to have games going until midnight, especially a 9-inning game.
Yeah, exactly. Jesse, one final question. You talk about Craig Counsell managing his team to a T. A lot of what Craig Counsell does, I think it's safe to say, is based on analytics, which is very important in the game now. You now watch it on a day-in and day-out basis. What is your opinion on analytics, the use of it, and is there any balance between, quote, old-style baseball and analytics, in your opinion, or should it go one way or the other?
Definitely. No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think you have to – I don't think it should go one way or the other. I think that's a miss. I think people who think that are missing both sides, because I think you saw, like, the Braves manager, Brian Snicker, like, he was not equipped to manage in the postseason because he's, like, an old-school players manager.
Sure.
But he came up to the minor leagues. He's going to throw a reliever another inning because he's riding the hot hand. Right. And you see Council, who's sort of the other way. And, like, I think he managed his team to a key in the sense that he got everything out of them. I think there's still things he could have done differently, but I don't know if he was necessarily equipped with the roster to do them.
Right.
But I think the blend of the two is what you see in these guys, Cora and Roberts. Like, Roberts, all those matchups and stuff he does work really well, but they only work really well because he has 12 great hitters. Like, it doesn't really matter if you have if you're gonna like I guess you could say, like, Philadelphia, like, Gabe Kapler is kind of in that way. Loves to match up, loves to win every single matchup he can. But at the end of the day, like, if you're signing five guys who should be playing first base,
right,
you're going to have a bad team. So, like, I do think there should be a blend of the two, and I think Roberts has struck that balance really well. I think Cora is a little more old school. Like, convention wouldn't say to hit Benintendi against a lefty and then also keep him in against a lefty specialist reliever.
Right.
But you look good when it's 4-for-5, and then someone's going to say, throw the analytics out. Well, okay, don't do that. Just don't use them in that one at-bat,
right,
which is different than throwing them out entirely. So I think you're right in that, like, the game can't be all numbers, but I also don't think, like, the Jason Worth quote about these dudes don't know baseball and it's all just robots and math.
Right.
Like, I don't think you're going to be finding him in a dugout anytime soon.
No, so. I don't think so either. And again, you have to have a feel for it. In other words,
right,
you know, he has some numbers that tell him that Devers is really good as a left-handed hitter against certain left-handed pitchers stylistic.
Mm-hmm.
So he started him. Right? Then when it came time to pinch hit, he pinch hit him. Hey, it looks brilliant. The guy hit a home run. Right?
Right.
It looks brilliant because
right,
Devers drove in two runs with a base hit. So you look like a genius when you do it. But yeah, it's interesting. It's like there's some people I think want to see it go one way or the other, and I think there's got to be a balance between the two, because I think if you balance the two of them, I think you get something that's really special. You also have to have the personnel to pull it off. So
right, absolutely. And I would say analytics are good when they work, and so is old school managing when it works. And the only thing you should do is use every resource you can to try and win games.
Exactly. Hey, pleasure. Great to talk with you, Jesse. Thanks so much for the time you gave us again today.
Yep, thanks a lot. Hope we talk again.
Jesse Doherty, Washington Post. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, home stretch here, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll have a writer on from the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Talk about Iowa football tomorrow, round tables tomorrow, and then I guess you're going to make the, Corey's already excited about the fact that the King will be showing up at Brewers Outlet.
That's right, noon hour on Friday. That's right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Noon hour on Friday. I want to try to get down there. I gotta see this. As I mentioned this about this time on the show yesterday, I'm deeply concerned that the King then will spend... I'm going to have to pry him out of Brewer's Outlet. We may have to... It may be a challenge getting him up here in time for the start of the show.
The pickle bar will be overwhelmed.
How about it? Because I've already warned him. I said there's at least, 10, 12 different flavors of pickles there.
Oh, yes, there are. And the garlic are a great favorite.
Oh, of yours. Oh, yeah. Old Bay?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Corey does a great job.
Yeah.
Yes, Old Bay. Like being around Girardi all the time. Like Old Bay on everything. I said, Dick, that's an ice cream sundae. Old Bay.
Cheerios? Old Bay and Cheerios. Yeah.
Old Bay. Okay, great. No, just kidding. We're going to have Dick on the show next week, by the way.
Oh, good.
Because next week we're going to talk hoops, and we're going to talk about Breeders' Cup next week.
And there's not a person on the planet that knows more about both than Dick Girardi.
No question. Yeah, I talked to DJ yesterday, as a matter of fact. So, yeah. That's on next week's show, something to look forward to. And
hoops getting closer. Bucknell, I believe, starts Bucknell hoops 2 weeks from tonight. I believe they crank up their season on the 7th.
In fact, Penn State has an exhibition game. Now, I won't be able to see it, obviously, but it's going to be Saturday, November 3rd at West Virginia.
Yeah, Bucknell at St. Bonaventure. That'll be 2 weeks from tonight to crank up the season here on Eagle 107. The home opener will be on Saturday, November the 10th against Fairfield. By the way, for those that are Bucknell basketball fans, it didn't take long for Bob's hand to go up. Yes, but you're good. You got your courtside seat.
Yes, I do.
You're good to go. But individual game tickets for both men and women go on sale this Friday. So you can go to BucknellBison.com for more information on how to get your tickets. I believe you also go to Bucknell.edu/boxoffice. Go there and get your tickets online on Friday for the individual seats for Soika.
So, Steve, an exhibition with West Virginia down in Huggins Country?
Yeah. Yeah, and there'll be money that'll go to charity. All the schools are doing this now, Bob, where they're playing exhibitions, the money goes to charity. It's just a way for them to get great competition and then put the money to a good cause.
Well, wasn't it a couple of weeks ago the University of North Carolina wanted to play Duke in some kind of an exhibition for charity, and the NCAA nixed it? It was to go to hurricane victims. So I agree that's a great idea, and it should be encouraged. And I think
that's what the money's going for this, is hurricane victims. Now, for Duke and North Carolina, it could have been the timing of it.
Yeah, they wanted to play right before the Final Four, I think.
Yeah. Of course they do. Yeah, that's no exhibition.
No.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, you know, I mean, look, I mean, you get a good idea where you are. I think it's done, you know, you can go through certain situations. I think it helps out. The game doesn't count.
Is it more like a scrimmage, or is it a 40-minute, 20-minute halves, or can they take time out and say, wait a minute, let's reset this play, or do they just go straight through?
It used to be that you'd scrimmage.
That's what
I thought. Yeah, it used to be you scrimmage. It's more like a game conditions. That's how they're going to do it. But that's going to be next week. I mean, I'll have to get a tape of it, because obviously I'll be at Michigan doing football, but...
By the way, Bob, congrats on your daughter's wedding last weekend.
Oh, thank you. Way to go,
wedding,
Bob.
Saw the wedding pictures, walking her down the aisle.
And she married a Penn State fan, so we're very happy.
There you go. Pass the test.
Yep.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, congratulations, Bob. That's great news.
Thank you so much, Steve and Sean.
And you're heading down to North Carolina, so safe travels next week.
Yep.
Safe travels.
Yeah.
I guess he's taking in North Carolina Duke basketball.
Yes. For charity.
That's because you're all about charity, Bob. That's just who you are.
My middle name.
It's funny. I talked to the suit about that. He said charity begins at home.
Yeah.
All right, so...
And you should see his house.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.